No time to waste. This is Ego and Vice, episode 126.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.
Hey, this is Mike. This is episode 126. This is Ego and Vice. Second episode into season 7, and we're rolling along. This one's a little bit of a longer episode, solely because I had an awesome conversation with some members of a band that I came up in the same kind of time frame. Maybe not in the same circles, but we had lots in common, and we had lots to talk about. And they're a band called Kingfisher. I've been wanting to have them on for quite a while. We finally got in touch. And I'm glad I did. Brett, Casey, and Dave came by to Southwood Studio. We sat down, and again, like I said, we had a great conversation. I'm going to get right to it. But before I do, I just want to say, check out the new website. It's egoandvicepodcast.com. It is your one-stop shop for everything Ego and Vice. I call it Ego and Vice HQ. It has all the episodes, every link, every subscribe button. You can donate, you can buy merch, you can contact me, leave a review, anything you'd like. EgoAndVicePodcast.com. So no one has to ask me, where can I listen to the podcast? Because it's all there. What is it? EgoAndVicePodcast.com. Anyway, this is a song called Gatekeepers. This is a band called Kingfisher. We'll be right back with Brett, Casey, and Dave. This is Ego and Vice, episode 126.
From the self-appointed king of the soul says quo. Home crack dictator will kick to the right. Standing in the back, don't be uptight. We're here to park trends, we gotta make friends. To be every ball's never even heard again. Love a secret scream. All these clowns trying to watch you see. Can you mind your business now? Oh, oh, oh. All these clowns trying to watch you see. Can you mind your business now? Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, we won't participate. We'll find another way. Make our own rules, doesn't matter what you say.
You can't hang with those people if you want to be part of this scene.
Well, we don't, so we'll go.
You'll see, can you mind your business now? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hey, welcome back. This is Eagle and Vice. This is episode 126. As promised, I have three members of the local band Kingfisher in Southwood Studio. Super happy to have them. How's it going?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Fantastic.
Great. I'm good. I'm super happy you're here. Yeah. I've just been cramming Kingfisher music for the last 2 days.
Oh, really?
Getting ready for the podcast. I took a couple months off, so you're my second podcast in. It's amazing how you kind of lose your chops in anything if you take a little bit of time off. Yeah, the band I had in last week, I was like stumbling and mumbling over my words. So anyway, let's introduce you guys. What I like to do is just kind of call it the round table. Just have some fun. Maybe introduce yourself, what you play in the band. And the question this week is, if you had to grab one hair metal song from the 80s to put in a time capsule for the future, what would it be?
So, okay, so my name is Brent. I'm a co-lead vocalist, I suppose, co-lead guitar player. I've written a fair chunk of the songs, I suppose, like probably most of them, and I guess maybe like the co-founding member as well. To answer your question, Fallen Angel by Poison. You know, highly, highly, highly underrated song. Very suspect because it came sort of like as they were in the slow fade into being those bloated goofs that that blew it at the Grammys when CC DeVille got all wasted and didn't know how to play. I think it was Unskinny Bop and he couldn't do it. But yeah, Fallen Angel, rock solid tune, and would be proud to cover as well.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm Casey. I play bass, and it's hard to argue with Breaking the Law.
Yeah, that's a good jam.
Is that Judas Priest?
That's Priest.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you can't go wrong there.
That's right. Casey mostly likes Rob Halford's leather chaps.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, that's very nice.
And the hairstyle.
And the hairstyle.
I'm going to give a little nod to the CanCon and say Love Changes Everything by Honeymoon Suite.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good. A Canadian. A good strong Canadian band. Yeah. I appreciate that. I'll answer it too. I normally don't, but I was going to say, and this might be like a B-side or a deep cut, but the very first, I think I was watching Much Music and I saw Monkey Business by the band called Danger Danger.
Oh yeah. I know that one.
And it was just a bunch of like long-haired guys on stage just acting like complete obnoxious douchebags, and I'm like, that's rock and roll.
Yeah.
Was that one of those videos where it was like they were clearly on like an arena-sized stage, but there was no one in the room?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they were running around and jumping on each other's backs and all like everything was awesome.
Beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Ain't no business like monkey business.
I think the idea is you make a video like that, and then you turn the camera to show the empty stadium.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and not to belabor that point, but I know we're having a conversation here. There was this band called Kix. I don't know if you guys remember Kix. K-I-X.
Was there two X's on that one?
Just one. Okay. No, just single X.
Okay.
They had a song called Cold Blood, and it was kind of the same idea as this Danger Danger video where they're in this room and there's like the lights and there's like clear the arena, but then it would spin around and look at the crowd and there was like 9 people. But it was like completely unironic. Like they were just trying to be like, this is the sweetest video ever.
This rocks so much.
Yeah. 9 people, but they were great.
Fake it till you make it, I guess.
Yeah,
man.
You got it.
Just own the stage.
Yep.
And that's good. I think that's good for any band out there. It's like play the same way in front of 100 people as you would in front of 9, or vice versa.
That's right, same show.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's the way. Kingfisher.
Yeah.
I know some of you have been around for a while in different bands throughout the city. Do you want to touch on some origin stories?
Yeah, sure. Do you want me to dive in on that? So the origin story for Kingfisher is that following the first demise of In Heat, which was the band I played in guitar in before Kingfisher started, Casey and I were longtime pals who hadn't seen each other in quite a while. We'd worked together at Long McQuaid when we were in our early to mid-20s, I think. And, and had done some music projects together, mostly as recording projects, I think, more than anything else. And Casey's hobby and passion is the home recording racket, which he's very good at. He approached me about possibly coming in and tracking a few In Heat songs. So we got together and did that at the Jam Space. We were jamming at the Capitol, at the rehearsal studio City Center, right when they first opened. And we were just kind of, you know, farting around a little bit, not really doing much with it. But then I said to Casey, hey, I've got these other songs I'm kind of working on. Do you want to maybe lay those down? And we said, okay, well, let's do that. So this goes back to, I think, early 2017, probably. And those songs were the foundation of what ultimately turned into this band.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think origin stories are, like, the most fascinating because they're kind of similar to other people's, but they're always just a little different. And I love how the universe just kind of puts things together.
Yeah.
Especially musically, right? Because it's really hard to... It's really hard. If you force it, if you force a band together, it's never going to kind of work. Right. But when stuff like that just kind of like, hey, we're here, let's do that. And it kind of works. And look at you now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the nice thing about it was that if for the other two guys that aren't here, it was really a recording project for 4 years, I think. Like we didn't even really have any intention on playing shows. We weren't going to do any of that stuff. We were just going to write songs and kind of keep them to ourselves. But then coming in out of the pandemic... We sort of said, yeah, maybe we should kind of get some of these things out. And then we had approached Joe, who was not here, unfortunately, but he's the other main co-writer and co-singer. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, well, we need a drummer. Casey knew Dave, who's the other guy who's not here. He'd just come back from Toronto. So it started as a four-piece, and we were a four-piece for about a year, played a handful of shows, did a couple EPs. And then we wanted to get a third guitar player to mostly, to be honest with you, add another voice because we like to do lots of backup vocals. It just happened that Steve could also play. So we talked to Steve. So Steve joined just over a year ago, and that's where we're at now.
Cool. Yeah. If you can, I love doing harmonies and recording, and you guys do your own recording. We can touch on that after, but that's one thing I do with home recording. I just sit here and I layer and layer and layer. And it's like, you can never pull that off live, but if you have three front guys or even four with Casey as a bass player who can sing and you put in enough effort and time and you make those four parts layered and you can do them live, fucking write your own ticket, right? And three guitars, you know, Bad Religion. You can't go wrong.
That's right. Exactly.
A lot of the influences from our combined history had a lot of layered vocals and a lot of the gang style.
Sure.
Yeah. We definitely came through that kind of environment, and we have had probably we need more, but we do try to pull off live what we're putting on the record. So even though we are layering a ton of harmonies, the idea is that don't write something that you can't pull off live.
100% agree.
Yeah.
Or don't. Okay, even, you know, at least try to get some percentage of it live, don't leave behind the studio magic. You have to incorporate some of it because that's what people get used to. Yeah. That's kind of like your groove, right? Where it's like, oh, I know that. So
yeah,
the beauty of the type of music you write, it's just so up my alley. And one thing I was going to ask you, and this is a really broad question, but what does melody mean to you?
Do you want me to answer that, guys? Like, I feel like I'm doing. I'm going to do all the talking here because that's what I'm a bit verbose, a bit wordy, I guess. You can write. I mean, writing songs can be easy if you don't put the time and effort into making them memorable. Mm-hmm. Melody is so. I've always equated it to, and I've said this, I think, to you lots of times. To Casey, I'm pointing at. Sorry, which is that you can fake it by having a guy in your band who, you know, can just sort of just play. Maybe not a drummer, but like your instrument guys, like if they're just passable enough, you can get by. But the audience is mostly going to connect with your front man or your front person, mm-hmm. your singer. So if you're not putting, like burying a melody in their head from the onset, they're not going to remember your band and you're just going to fade into the background. So I think it's like the most important thing you can do is really focus on writing a hook mm-hmm. that everyone's going to remember. You want them to be able to sing along with the second chorus after they've heard the first chorus, the first time they've heard your song. That's the goal.
I feel like it's sort of a home run when Brent shows me a song and I say, that sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. And it's not even necessarily ripping something off, but we know we have similar influences. And so if a song sounds familiar to me, I think we've hit the formula.
Yeah. Yeah. It's feeling, you know?
There's melody. there's melody and there's so many different types of melody out there. Like you can think of like a Michael Bolton who does like a
sweet,
how am I supposed, you know, but and that's that vehicle. And then you could think of like, I don't know, R&B and stuff like that. But there's something about the vehicle of like power pop or punk rock or skate punk where you try and find that not too emotional, but just hooky enough thing with enough kind of weight behind it. I've been chasing that hook my entire life when it comes to songwriting.
Yeah.
The first thing it will bring back to Bad Religion for me. The first thing I heard was in that sense was Greg Graffin from Bad Religion and No Control.
Yeah.
But he prides himself on his melodic structure of songs and vocal patterns and four-part harmonies and that, but for me that's just very pocketed. It's very Bad Religion sound, like guck, guck, guck. I find it almost aggressive in not a rah, rah, kind of way, but just it's almost robotic to me a little bit. I love it, love them, it's one of my favorite bands.
Yeah,
but I've always loved that kind of. Have you ever heard the band Nothington?
Yeah, they're great.
You know that song, In the End?
Yes, it's
In
amazing.
In the end, I guess we never had. It has that perfect, relatable, kind of sad, but not too sad, perfect hook that will make you drive down the road and feel like, wow, that's. I wish I wrote that song.
They're a real throwback to the era that we were coming up in as guys that are in their 40s now. Like I think they were in Tsunami Bomb, if I remember right, and then they started that band when that band fell apart. They got two great singers, both of these super gravelly voices. That record that you're talking about there is like 5-star. It's unbelievable. But I'm not saying, I certainly don't want to lift anything from any bands, but that is definitely one of the bands when I'm writing songs where I'm like, I need to make something that makes me feel like that record makes me feel.
I completely understand where you're coming from that. And I hear a lot of those hooks and a lot of that weight in the Kingfisher songs. I really do. I think the first one, I wrote the first correspondence that we had again was the, song titles are the worst for me. Like I could sing it to you, but The Fire Inside, that was one of your, off of your second EP, I think it was, Generation Zero?
That was on Generation Zero. Joe actually wrote that one.
You would have a very easy time guessing at the title of that song.
Yeah.
My Fire Inside?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it has that weighty, awesome melodic hook that kind of grabbed me. I'm like, who are these guys, right?
Nice.
And then I listened through the rest of the do they still call it a discography, Kevin? We still
sure,
call it?
Yeah.
The catalog?
Yeah.
I would say catalog. Yep. And I hear it all over the place, and it's relatable to me because I've tried to write those songs.
Yeah.
So it's cool that I'm talking to you guys, and it's cool. That's why I brought up the melody question. It just wasn't kind of, I just wanted to see if it was the same as, well, somewhere in the same ballpark of where I was.
Speaking of old and new, we actually have discs. So
so do I.
Yeah.
So we actually have.
I got boxes. Do you want to buy one?
But we have a discography where lots of bands these days don't.
Yeah. Well, that's a focus. That's because there's a real focus, I think, now on people releasing songs one at a time, like singles.
Mm.
And we sort of bought into that this past year, where we sort of said it's easier to push one song at a time if you're streaming versus trying to sell a whole record.
Mm-hmm.
But then ultimately, we compiled everything at the end of the year and made it into. I mean, it's 8 songs, but it's sort of almost a full length. It would be like a very long EP.
Kingfisher.
That's
two.
Right. Yeah, that's two.
That's okay. It's based on, we did the first year a certain way. This was our second year. So basically the 2023 singles were culminated into the.
That's cool. But I think that's a good way to do it. I've had this conversation, and this topic has come up on the podcast a lot about singles over full records. And it's been about 50-50. People think like singles are great because it's fresh and it's new and you can promote it, like instead of just saying here's our new record and then okay there it's out, right? Every couple of months you have something new to kind of push, right? And it's different feel, different flavor. But there's other people that love just a work, you know, like an album.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, and I'm from the generation, and this is super cliche, where you go out and you flip through it and you buy it and you open it and you smell it and you read the lyrics and stuff. So digital to me is still kind of, it's great, it's super easy, but it's still kind of shallow too, right? It's just
need something tactile.
The worst part is that certain artists have monopolized the vinyl industry, and so many vinyl plants have shut down that if you want to make a vinyl record, it takes 6 to 9 months from the time you place the order to the time you have something in your hand.
It's hard.
You'll probably hopefully, but you probably won't ever recoup the money you spent too, right? Unless you're like touring hard and you know,
you gotta sell a lot of copies, especially because you only press a couple hundred on your master, and your master costs what, $800 to make.
I think it's tough. I think it'd be awesome to have one. There's actually a place, the producer that I go to, his name's Jordan Zadorozny in Pembroke, and he told me he gave me a link. I can find it somewhere, but there's a place in Chicago that will make you like one record. Whatever you want. They'll make it to order. Probably cost you a fortune, but if you just want one for your, to say, here's my, from, and put it in your slot and it's you guys,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. Without ordering, like, you need to make a max load of 1,000 or some shit, right? Yeah,
carrying 1,000 records around. You got a forklift?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Hopefully they don't have a scale at the border. We're paying tolls here. Anyway. So yeah, as far as recording goes, you touched on it a bit that you record your own stuff. Do you have like a studio, or is it just
you're going to take that one?
It's definitely, let's talk about that.
Definitely a home studio, no isolation. Part of our recordings is the bleed. Mm-hmm. We bleed into each other. But essentially I started on Tascam
4-track.
Well, it was actually an 8-track reel to reel. It was, I got it at Songbird before they were Spaceman. Yeah. And it was probably 300 pounds. And I found a way to get it home. Mm-hmm. Friends, and we just did some demos. Then I sort of upgraded or downgraded, depending on your opinion, to Pro Tools, but the light version, because it's expensive. I went to, I did the overnights at Distortion, mm-hmm. when Distortion was still around. Yeah. I always wanted to record my friends. I never really wanted it to be a job. It's been a hobby. Lots of people ask me, will you record my band? And I say yes, but I'm not going to charge you anything, because once it becomes,
will you record my band?
Yes, yeah. I will.
Yeah.
Thought I'd strike while the iron.
He works pretty good, man. Yeah. He's good at it. You know?
I'll record any band once. We'll do a little sampler first. But basically it's always been sort of just a way to make things, like create something. I've never really been a super talented visual artist. Mm. I'm sort of practicing a bit, like just practicing different mediums, and recording's always been a fun thing to do at home, and mm-hmm. you can do it yourself, you can do it with friends.
I think that is, as I get older too, I find I've always gone to the same let's say the majority of my recordings has always been to the same producer. Like I said, his name's Jordan. He lives in Pembroke. I've been going there for 20 years, and I bought like some software, and it's the same stuff I have. It's Reason. And I just started recording like demos and stuff like that. That was always the goal for it, right? But as things are moving on and I'm starting to kind of like not want to go, I don't really want to spend the money to go to a studio. Sorry, Jordan. I don't really want to spend the money to go to a studio. I am really looking at the whole recording, like the Beatles the last freaking 5 years. They're recording artists. They just sat and took their time and recorded records and released them.
Yeah.
And I really want to venture off and to get more. So I might pick your brain one day.
Sounds good.
He's a good guy for that. You going?
I was just going to say, I know Brent and I, like we knew each other from high school, and we were playing in a band probably 20 years ago now, the first time around. And like we've talked about ad nauseum about like how wild it is to us now, where the way we'll record and, you know, we'll have Dave lay down some drums, and then there are times where Joe and I will record our guitars separately at home and just email them in to Casey, and he'll just compile it all. And it's and you know, the quality is, you know, something we're doing for free would have cost, you know, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars to do 20 years
ago. It's become so much more accessible.
I think that part of like the, like if we were going to say we had a manifesto, which just sounds a little creepy when you think about it, but if we, one of the founding principles of the project when we started this all those years ago was, we don't want to pay money to people to do this for us. We have enough in-house experience to do this ourselves. So let's do it ourselves and see how good we can make it and how far we can take it without any kind of external influence. So we've never had a producer. Everything we tracked was in Casey's basement. Steve's got recording experience. Joe has also got quite a lot of recording experience. So we have years, decades of experience in the band. and the tools we have available, I just think it's the guys that we have know how to get the most out of them. And that's why the recordings sound as good as they sound.
That's fucking great. I respect that. That's like literally putting your heads together and just doing it.
The
right?
DIY.
DIY.
It's like, I'll never work for a boss again.
Yeah. That's right.
I respect that. I do. I totally do. And if you have the means to, and even if it's a learning process as you go, maybe your first record doesn't sound as good as your new latest record, but you'll hear the, you know, and it's all you.
That's right.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
It's awesome to hear the improvements and the way that it's changed over time. And we can hear, like, even our songwriting abilities have...
They've evolved.
Evolved, yeah. As we kind of said, well, that one worked. That one maybe didn't work quite as well.
That's right. But, you know, and like, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but we took that DIY thing probably to... The only things I think we've actually farmed out was... when we had to actually produce merch like in bulk, we did hire someone to make it, but we designed it ourselves.
Yeah.
We booked all our own shows. Like we played out of town a ton now. You know, like in Ontario and Quebec, like we haven't been far, but we played probably 15, 20 shows, I'm going to say.
But even the ones that we farm out.
Yeah.
Angela.
Yeah.
Friend of the band.
That's right.
My cousin Miles, Renegade Apparel.
Yeah.
And in Kingston...
Ironclad. Yeah.
In the Beta 58s.
Yeah.
So it's not, I won't say incestuous, but basically we keep it in house.
Keep it in house.
Where whenever we have someone, even if it's not someone directly in the band, it will go to friends and family first.
It's in the Kingfisher universe.
That's right.
You got it, man. You got it, man.
And we're always trying to grow the network. And that's one of the things that has been really important to us is growing the network, getting to know people, talking to people.
Yeah.
I am when I'm at a Kingfisher show, I'm a different person than in my home life, in my work life, because I know how important it is to have conversations with human beings, which is very difficult for me outside of...
That's fair.
It's true. Fair. And the other thing that we I think really took maybe a lot of pride on, and I know that maybe I don't want to go down too far in the rabbit hole, was that we always tried our best to make sure that when we're playing local shows that we've got bands that we've sort of become buddies with over the short time we've been doing this, get them up here to play, promote the hell of the shows ourselves to make sure they have a good night, and then we made sure that they got paid so that it wasn't like they came for $50
gas money.
Like, we had some guys that we sort of knew through Dave that came up for the very first show we ever played, and they drove up literally with a tent and sleeping bags, and it was not warm.
No.
We managed to throw like $300 from the door at them that night.
They said, "Oh my God, we get to stay in a hotel."
Yeah, blew their minds. So we always felt like if you're gonna make it a community, take care of the other bands that are coming and doing this, and then we can all take care of each other.
And then full circle.
Yeah.
That was Lime Ricky.
Yep.
And then Tyler.
Yep.
Joined.
Yeah,
Doghouse Rose invited us to open for Doghouse Rose. Yeah,
we just played with them last week.
You get back what you give.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I wonder if that's like, and I'm not going to say other generations don't do that, but I wonder if that's just being older and wiser and more empathetic to our own
Gen
experiences,
X
right? Yeah, right. Because I have bands that I know that come through Ottawa. There's one called Voice of Addiction.
Yeah.
Niall Osiris from New York City. Voice of Addiction's from Chicago. Whenever they come, I just let them crash at my place. Yeah. I make them breakfast type of shit. You know what I mean? And that's a huge expense for guys.
Hell yeah.
Like on the road, right?
That is, I think, the biggest roadblock for bands getting out of their own little enclave is how am I going to afford to be able to go do that if I have to find somewhere to sleep and I have to eat while I'm there? And you know you're going to walk in the club and they're going to be like, yeah, here's like 40. That's the way it goes.
Agreed.
Turbo House has a pretty good
Turbo House is great.
Recipe. They have basically an apartment above the bar.
There you go.
You can have a shower, you can do your laundry, and then they do make you breakfast in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about, especially like when you're traveling and stuff like that, even when you stay in a hotel, aren't you excited to get up and go down and get the free coffee and stuff? That's the best meal of the day. It truly is. And if you're on tour and you can actually have a real breakfast that's not in like a... Anyway, I'm just saying. Lyrics.
Yes.
Who writes the lyrics?
All of us, I think, in some sense. We'll have like base ideas. Joe's probably the best at it. But I think we all sort of contribute and edit. So I'd call it a group thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've brought this up before. As you've gotten older, do you find it harder to write lyrics? Especially being in a punk band.
That's a great question.
I think we all write lyrics a little differently. I mean, like, I'm probably leaning on older things because I've got a pretty happy, comfortable life realistically. So I'm kind of maybe leaning on the past to.
Yeah. It's easy to write things about stuff that you're mad about.
Right.
And when you become older, it's not like there's not things out there to make you mad. You're just kind of like, eh. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't care that much about them anymore.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call it manufactured anger. I think you just have to kind of maybe be a little more thoughtful about it when you're doing it, you know?
My whole take on it was, like, yeah, when you're younger, you're also not afraid of kind of, like, speaking, like, not making a fool of yourself by speaking that emotion. You know, it's like, well, I'm sad or I'm angry. It's like, if you're, like, a 45-year-old guy going, God damn it, Mr. Name, you know what I mean? It's just...
Yes.
You're kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah,
I don't think that's real. I think that'll come across kind of phony. So as I'm sitting there writing, it's like, no, that's dumb. That's dumb. I'm too old to say that.
I do. Like, I personally do a ton of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I try and do more like introspective things. Like, and I sing about what I've done already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When I was younger, way back then.
We have songs specifically about when we were younger. And I do think, though, that comes off maybe a little more authentic anyways.
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. And there's... endless, there's a lifetime of material to write about, right?
Experience.
And like what you said, you just got to be clever about it and put it in the right sense. So it's like, yeah, I can sing that and not look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kingfisher is a bird.
True. That is accurate. It's
how
also
did
a
it
beer.
Become, how did it become a band name?
Jeez, do I have to answer that one too?
I wasn't around.
I don't remember where it came up specifically. I think it was just something where I was like, you want to have a simple name, it's easy to remember. Something that at the time you thought it wasn't really, no one's done this before. And then you realize with streaming, you realize there's like fucking 14 other bands called Kingfisher.
Always.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Yeah, but they're everywhere. So we're the only one that I can find, at least in Ottawa. Maybe the only one in Canada. There's one in upstate Michigan and one in England, I think.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of them who are not active.
Yeah.
There's one or two active ones, but with the streaming and Spotify, it doesn't go away.
No.
So there's no such thing as out of print as much as there used to be.
I'm kind of in the same boat since my band's name is Goat, also an animal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the big thing for it was I said, like, you know, that's probably something you could draw like 20 different ways and like make it look cool.
It's got a really cool visual symmetry as
your
far
logos,
as when the wings
your
are.
Your logo's actually very interesting. And you said you guys do your own logos
and
stuff
I drew
too,
that.
Eh?
Yeah,
it's very, very cool. And it's you remember it too. It looks great on a t-shirt.
It does, yeah.
And you can spray paint it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I guess maybe that kind of bled into it. But I'll be honest with you. I came up with that name. I bet you I came up with that name 3 or 4 years before we even started the project. Like, it was just one that was always kind of bubbling in the back of my mind there, you know what I mean? And
okay.
It was just like, this is the time, let's unleash it.
So it just sounded cool, looked cool, a lot to do with it, real deep affiliation to, the bird itself?
Nope.
But a shout out to the bird.
Yeah. It's a mighty little guy.
Attaboy.
Part of the tarps off concept. Brent sees himself as a king, and he's very immodest.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, but I would say definitely tarps off is the way to do shows. Yeah.
speaking of the DIY, when it comes to videos, I guess you guys do that as well.
We've done lots.
On phones.
Yeah, shot them all on a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's the editing then. That's the tricky part of that stuff.
Joe's done the for the most. I think you've done a bit.
Yeah,
Casey's done a bit too.
I try to incorporate more live footage. Like, I try to put live stuff in with it, and I did the green screen, white screen stuff.
Yeah, for the most part though, Joe's done a lot of the editing. I think he was maybe a little more passionate about doing the editing than the rest of us were. So we were happy to hand the keys to him and say like. Fill your boots.
Yeah, I try to do more like no cuts.
Yeah, like one shot.
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah,
cool. So yeah, for a band that's only been around, well, technically, I guess, officially for since around 2022-ish.
January 2022, first song came out.
I was looking. I try and do a little bit of research the most I can. Like I said, I'm not a professional journalist, but I do what I can.
You're doing well so far. Yeah.
Lots of shows that you've played. Yeah. Dom hosted Targ, Bronson Center. You opened for Mad Caddies.
We did.
You did a tour called the Provocation Tour.
That was last spring. Yep.
Yes, Kitchener, sir. Peterborough, TO, Ajax, Montreal.
Yep.
Got any great tour stories?
Fuck.
How was that? How was your first?
Steve,
first...
tell them about Trackside. That was your first show.
That's oh, boy.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you been there?
I was there when it was the Death House and Trackside.
And Trackside.
Same place.
Yep.
That's an experience.
That is. I mean, kind of like this mini Thunderdome. It's, yeah. It was, it was definitely an experience. Yeah, just kind of like pulling into this parking lot and what looked like an abandoned warehouse in Montreal and kind of trying to figure out where we go. And then like someone kind of peeks out from behind a couple buildings and is like, hey, follow me down this rickety wooden
don't look walkway. In the bathtub.
Yeah. Yeah, just ignore that bathtub over there. And
literally the wrong side of the tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know why it looked like an abandoned warehouse?
Because
it's an abandoned warehouse.
Yeah.
It was nice though. The wide open windows gave you a nice breeze when you're playing on the stage.
It was definitely and the thing is like, that was your first show with us, I think. When we did that Trackside show, wasn't it?
Think that
yeah,
was.
Yeah, because you got sick and you missed the first two shows of that
tour, yeah.
Yeah.
He saw us at Targ before he played.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But the first time he played.
Yeah,
was
no, you're
at
right. That was the first one. Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you've been there, you know what you're getting yourself into. We did not know what we were getting ourselves into. We were happy to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we'd play there again. Mostly because I feel like some kid's going to die in there while we're playing.
That's a funny story, actually, because I played there as Goat in my other band, Goat, and when it was called the Death House.
Yeah.
All good, and I think I said the same thing. Well, that was an experience. I'll never do that again. Sound, not taking anything away from it, but at that time, the Death House, sound was shit, room was shit, hot, scary, bad, everything.
Yeah.
The vibe was great, though.
Immaculate vibes.
Yeah. Was with the Riptides maybe 5 years ago, and they said, we got a gig in Montreal at Trackside. I'm like, oh, sweet. We started getting closer to the area, and I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pulled into the parking lot, and you kind of go around the wooden planks, and there's people that are living in the... looking out those windows and shit. This is the fucking Death House. I said. I couldn't believe I was back again. But it was much nicer and much... Well...
Shit.
It was much
nicer. You gotta use air quotes. Yeah.
It wasn't the Death House anymore.
I definitely aged a year. The amount of secondhand smoke.
Yeah, it was the smoking inside that killed us. Like, it's one of those things that you don't really appreciate how much it was impacting you when you're playing shows when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's gone for a while.
The blue air at safe fights.
Yeah. I think we all I think it was dope, like pot smoking too. I remember we were like super like, wah. Like,
yeah, it was for us. I mean, there was definitely weed smoking, and there were probably some cracks.
There was also some really interesting.
I didn't even think about that.
BYOB, pay what you can. Mm-hmm. BYOB.
Like I said, like if it wasn't that the building was such a like a death trap, for the lack of a better word. I mean, you're talking about like
Death House.
There was like one way in, one way out. The staircase was not that I'm like gonna be nitpicky, but the staircase is obviously not to code. So like, you know, and then there's just like
balcony thing.
Yeah,
oh,
there's kids on the second floor like boning on the pool table, and I'm like, someone's gonna fucking die in here.
Nah.
I was like, I'm glad we're playing though. But
yeah,
that was a good time.
Yeah, it was one of those like at the time we were like, this is the greatest fucking thing ever, and then about like by the next morning we're like. Yeah, we're not going.
We all sounded like Cloris Leachman.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, we were we were touring with Nothing Serious, who like they're more around 30.
Yeah, they're a bit younger than us.
They're like, and I mean, it's been a long time for us, but like these are guys who, and like fucking good for them, have never experienced indoor smoking in their lives.
Yeah.
And the next day in Ottawa, they were just like, they were all just kind of gray and like just not doing well. We don't even understand what's going on. We just all feel so sick.
It's like you have lung cancer now.
Yeah, speaking of which, that was one of our double headers.
That was.
We played a show the next day.
Oh yeah, we played a show like literally the next night. And I mean, we were fine. I thought we did fine. But that was a tough night in the office though.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, the kids were super into it.
Sure.
Yeah, there was some people there who were singing along to our songs. They didn't know the songs, but they were still singing.
They were doing their best.
While we were playing.
Like that far away from Steve's face.
We met two people who have now come from Montreal twice since the Trackside show.
Oh.
And we were talking about the emotions and the way that a melody makes you feel.
Yeah.
When we start playing Gatekeepers, the reaction that we get from Jessica.
They go crazy.
She goes nuts, and it gives me a boost of adrenaline
to
see them go crazy.
Yeah,
people were just generally going nuts at the Dom. last week.
Yeah. Dom's good.
Well, you just never know. I think that's why you got to keep. You can play your own city as many times as you want, but until you start like getting out there and doing there, a little bit of touring and people discovering you, right?
You got it.
I have just a few more things to just see if you guys want to talk about.
Yeah.
I've touched on over the course of the podcast about just getting older. You guys are still doing it, which is much respect. And I guess if it's in you, it'll never not be in you.
You got
it. It's part of who you are. It's part of your blood. Speaking of just touring now, like what you guys were gone for a week or however long, and playing shows, you were talking earlier how y'all have kids?
Yes, all five of us have
kids. How has that transition been from when you were young, strapping crazy lads to now responsible fathers still hitting the road?
Responsible, eh?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, probably, like, I've, with different bands, I've toured on and off now for 25 years, probably. Mm-hmm. One of the differences now, for whatever it counts for, is, I think this goes for all of us, their kids are old enough that, I mean, we're mostly doing, like, weekends. We'll do, like, a back-to-back weekend, but, like, I think the kids are old enough now that it's not necessarily an undue burden. It might... You know, like our collective partners might not be in love with it, but yeah. Like it's not like a major undue burden to leave behind, you know, teenagers.
Yeah, the WAGs are definitely generally pretty supportive, which has been super helpful. But like Steve was saying, when they were little kids, we probably couldn't have got away with this. But now that they're a bit older, it's like it's not as much of a burden.
Cool.
It's also really interesting to have the kids and their teachers who come to the shows.
Oh, yeah, we've had some of their teachers out to the shows.
Yeah, because their teachers are our age.
Yeah. and it's not even ironic. Like they claim they legitimately like us. Like it's like if they didn't have their kids in their class, they'd probably still be at the show, which is kind of rad.
Well, Kingfisher is not a hard band to not like. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're in some kind of crazy screamo, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, that's
got a little crossover.
That was nice, you know. But it's actually it's if they're your age, your French teachers, they're used to that. They know that that groove, that melody. Yeah. Like what caught me, like there it is, type of stuff. So
also
very cool.
I also think one of the things we consciously try to do is not write 12 of the same song. We definitely try to pull influences from different places.
Yeah. That's good.
And have different voices, and we're experimenting more with. Steve is going to have songs on the record that he wrote and that he's the lead singer. So now we have basically three lead singers where we had two before with more backups. And it's one of the coolest things I find is where we're actually singing on each other's songs and taking turns, the call and response.
Yeah.
And
it opens up a lot of doors for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of makes the songs like Steve writes songs that like stylistically, like in a silo might be different than what I write. And then they would be different from what Joe writes. But because we're all kind of putting our own little thing on it, they ultimately all end up coming sound like what we wrote.
Yeah.
And that's the goal.
And the voices are complementary too.
Yeah.
There's three different ranges. So we actually have a wider range to keep things interesting because of the different voices and the different vocal ranges.
Yeah. That's right. That's cool. Yeah. If you have all the, I was always like, for a long, long time, I was in a three piece. I could only, I suppose I could have, but I wasn't creative enough to figure out how to be fancier as a three piece.
It's
but
hard.
I was a punk rock song, right? Or a punk rock band, right?
Yeah.
But I think in the end, it's all kind of been done.
Yeah.
But as long as it's new to you and it's exciting for you, and in the end, it sounds like Kingfisher.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And nobody plays your songs or my songs better than each other. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right.
So it's like, who's to say?
And there's still an audience for that. Like we're finding it too. Like I don't think we were skeptical about it, but it's kind of like satisfying to go out and play and realize that like, and I've said this to the guys too, is like, obviously a lot of the bands that we're not saying intentionally emulating, but drawing inspiration from were bands that we grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like that era has aged extremely well. Like,
I think so too.
You know what I mean? Like it doesn't sound dated to listen to like a early Face to Face record. You know, to me it still sounds fresh.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if you're writing stuff that's in that style, it's still just good tunes. It's going to appeal to people.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Face to Face should stay away from acoustic guitars though. I don't want to shit on Face to Face.
No, they have definitely earned their spot in the pantheon of like 90s punk rock heroes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree that that acoustic record was a misstep.
It was all, yes, it was also kind of the thing to do. I guess it always will be. There's always that acoustic stuff, or the lead singer will go play some rockabilly country. I don't understand that transition. I guess I do for the songwriting aspect of it.
Yeah.
But I just understand all of a sudden you got to write this twangy slide guitar-y kind of.
I wrote
anyway.
A song about that.
Did you?
Yeah, it's on. It was on two last year.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, it's called Old Punks.
Okay, we're getting a little long in the tooth here because we still have 13 questions with the band. It's a game I like to play.
Let's play the game, sir. So, long-winded.
Before we get into that, we'll just end the main conversation.
Yeah.
What does the future hold for Kingfisher? What do you guys got on the go for 2024? And do you have any like quick shout-outs to anybody?
Who wants to take that one?
Well, we've started pre-production on year three.
I think it's almost done, actually.
Yeah, I'd say it's almost done. But
probably done by the end of the week.
We've got the envious problem of too many good songs. So whittling them down, we're going to probably reach out to some buddies who we trust their opinions and
solicit see some feedback.
Yeah, solicit
Maybe
some
we'll
feedback.
Get some from you if you're interested.
I am and a fan.
Sweet. Try to get it down from about 30 to about 12 or 13, 14-ish.
I think we hit 24 songs that we'd written for the record, and our intention is to whittle it down to maybe 10 or 11.
Yeah. That's decent, right?
Yeah. And then we start tracking for real. We've been doing pre-production demos and stuff.
As soon as we got isolated, we need probably a month to just kind of hammer out the kinks and with the five of us in the room, like, playing them. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be time to start tracking. And ideally, that record comes out, I'm going to say July, August, something like that. And then we'll hit the road for a while and try to play as many shows as we can between middle of August and before the snow starts flying, because we don't like to be on the road when it's snowy.
No.
Yeah.
I think you've earned that over the years. Yeah. It's like, we're not doing that.
Play a handful of shows through the spring just to stay fresh and to stay relevant. You know, maybe shoot down to Montreal. We're down in Toronto in June for a one-off. So, you know, we'll do that here and there. But when the record comes, like, we're gonna try to properly push it this time. Like,
cool.
We didn't do a ton of promo, I don't think, the last time, but we're going to try to do a lot more this time.
So. Cool. Yeah. Well, sounds like a plan. Sweet. Any quick shout-outs to anybody? Any thank yous? Any hellos?
Oh, man. Certainly the wives for putting up with letting us do this, you know, because I'm sure they don't see it necessarily the way we see it, but I think they see how it makes us feel. And they're very important. But a lot of really cool bands that we've met over the last year or so. Geez, like, you list them all. Like,
Nothing Serious.
Among Legends.
Played with The Nils.
Yeah, played with The Nils.
Played
that was
with
cool.
Choke.
Yeah, we just did Doghouse Rose. And so a lot of local guys that we've played with now over the years, over the last couple of years. Friggin' Rich. Rich is in like 20
Rich
bands.
Chris is in Rich. Every band.
Yeah.
So lots. And then, you know, like, you know, the people that we lean on to help out. So it's like, you know, Scotchy and Yogi and Scallon and those guys for, you know, getting shows. Christina as well. I shouldn't leave her out too. But, you know, like, just everyone who's still in the community that's like trying to like keep the scene cooking, you know, you have our gratitude, and we always want to work hard for those people too. So.
Well said.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a game. It's called 13 Questions with the Band, but nice. I have to ask your consent before I get started. Would you like to play Kingfisher?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Time for 13 Questions with the Band. Yes, this segment's back again. It's called 13 Questions, but I only asked 6, maybe 5. Okay, hey, we're back. Okay, this is 13 Questions with Kingfisher. Now, I have 13 questions. I don't actually ask you the 13 questions. Right. It's just I ask you some questions out of the 13 questions.
Got it. Okay.
I don't know why I call it 13 questions with the band. It's just that's what I call it because I wrote the jingle.
Yeah.
And I'm too lazy to make a new one. Okay. First question. You can each answer individually.
We'll go in a thing.
Sure. What is your desert island record? Like, if you had one record and you were going to be on a desert island for the forever.
Great question. You want to go first?
Shit. I'd say
Science by Incubus.
That's a good record. Mm-hmm. I would say Rain Dogs by Tom Waits.
Ooh. I'd say maybe You'd Prefer an Astronaut by Hum.
That's a great record.
All right. Very good. Next question. What was your very first live concert that you attended as a attendee, I guess?
I still remember this one. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I was a Beaver. At the X, and my dad in his minivan got blocked in because it happened to be the night that Sting was playing at the X.
Oh.
So we couldn't get our car out. The security guy just brought us into the nosebleed section, but my first concert that I ever saw was Sting at the X.
Wow, that's a random one. That's pretty cool. You don't hear that too often. How was it? You remember?
I remember it was loud. It was, I couldn't have been more than 10.
Okay.
It was a long time ago,
yeah.
But it was exciting.
Yep.
I can say that.
Yeah. For me, so I grew up in Halifax, as I think I'd mentioned, and there's a bit of a background, other than too long-winded, but this show actually plays into the reason why I started doing music in the first place. So I moved to Ontario in 1990, but I had gone back in the summers to visit family that still was there and friends that I went to elementary school and junior high with. And they had started a band in the first year I was gone, and the band was called Bunk. They were from Dartmouth, which is on the other side of the bridge.
Uh-huh.
There was a place run by a guy named Condon McLeod in downtown Halifax called the Cafe Olé, and it was an all-ages club. It was the only all-ages club in town. And there was a band from up North Shore called the Quahogs playing, and they're playing with Bunk. But their third band that was there was this indie rock band from I don't remember if they were Nova Scotia, but they're called Plumtree. I don't know if anyone remembers Plumtree or not.
I saw Plumtree what's it called? The Pit.
Yeah. So this was Plumtree's first show ever. And I just randomly happened to be at this show. It was the first show I ever saw. It was their first show that they had ever played. But I remember watching my friends play the show, and I said, that's it. That's what I want to do. And as soon as we got back from Halifax, I got my first guitar, and it never looked back. So that was my first show.
You still have that guitar?
Still have that guitar. It doesn't work anymore. Still have it, though.
Yeah, super, they're very East Coast power pop, but, like, very, like, saccharine, like, just... Like, they were good, but it was like...
Didn't they have a song on the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack? I think they did.
They might have, but yeah. I saw them play with, like, a couple, like, hardcore bands, and it was something. But, like, to go hyper-local, honestly, my first show, believe it or not, would have been at the Pit with Bertha Does Moose Jaw, Claymouth, and Stum.
I remember Stum.
But, Bertha Does Moose Jaw, I was friends with Justin's brother, and, I mean, we're probably in middle school, and he's like, hey, my brother's playing a show downtown. It's like basically never at the point even really been downtown in my life. And
were you in town when Bertha was still playing?
No, I don't.
That would have been the 90s.
Yeah.
No,
90s. You missed out something very special.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Bertha was very special.
Cool.
Shout out Tony Barnes.
Yeah. I think that was before he was in the band.
Tony was their second guitar player.
Or second bassist. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to ask this question because there are some bands that come in that I can't ask this question to because they've never done it.
Okay.
What is the first record, CD, or cassette that you ever bought with your own money?
Would have been Weird Al Yankovic.
That's a good one.
It was the Jurassic Park one, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember that one either. I had Weird Al in 3D on a tape.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I don't remember.
It was the one with the Jurassic Park on the cover.
Yeah. Okay, we'll have to
stick a pin in that.
We'll have to do some research on that one. Hey, just because we never got back to it, the Weird Al Yankovic record that Casey was referring to was Alapalooza. All right, back to the show.
So the first one I bought, and this is no word of a lie, was Just Buy It by Furnace Face.
Shit.
Yeah, which was incidentally plays into that whole Nova Scotia thing, because all my friends in Nova Scotia were super into Furnace Face. I didn't even realize they were from Ottawa when I went back. But then they showed me Furnace Face. I was like, these guys are amazing. Had to come back and get a tape copy of Just Buy It, and then realized in later years, of course, I got to know Tom really well. So it was like everyone in Ottawa's got a Furnace Face.
My first one, I think, was Bon Jovi 2400 Fahrenheit on vinyl when I was like 5 years old. And people think it's insane, but like some of my first albums were Metallica and Motley Crue and Bon Jovi that I was buying when I was like 5-6 years old. And I mean, full credit to my babysitter at the time. She's the one that got me into all this, because I'd get home from school and she basically just like, here, we're going to watch the Power Hour together. And nice. So that was...
Teresa Roncon or Erica M, was it? I can't remember. Pepsi Power Hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was good shit.
Hell yeah.
Okay, where am I here? Next question. If you had a time machine and you could go see any musical event, what would it be?
Wow. I think Queen at Live Aid would be hard to beat.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
The audience engagement and just like singing along.
Actually, I probably have a tie between two. The Nirvana show that they did at Reading apparently was just legendary. But there was also... the Stone Roses did one on Spike Island, I think, in about 1989, and I remember seeing aerial footage of this thing, and it looks like that would have just been the defining moment of that generation, and I think that would have been something really cool to see.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to say something actually cool.
She's like, Bertha Does Moose Jaw.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm not even like really into them, but like honestly, probably seeing something like Primetime Kiss like arena show would be, yeah.
even like bloated Kiss shows are wicked.
Yeah.
Kiss. Okay, sorry. I was just reading. I completely lost my.
You were thinking about Kiss.
I was thinking about Kiss. I was thinking about like the Lick It Up video. You ever yeah. seen that where they're walking?
Have I ever seen the Lick It Up video? I want to recreate
the junkyard,
that.
And it was like their first like appearance in the media without makeup.
Without the makeup.
And I just remember fucking like this. Gene Simmons was all so greasy.
Yeah,
like
he's always so oily.
He was so sweaty or something. Yeah. I don't know what was.
Looks
going
like he's
on
made of wax.
Yeah, awful. Anyway. Okay. If Kingfisher could open for any band, who would it be?
Any band ever?
Sure.
That's a very tough question.
That's a really tough question.
Like, cause there's so many that we'd be happy to.
Yeah.
How do you pick one?
I've got one in my mind for sure. And you're going to laugh at me when I say it, but I'll say it anyways.
I'm going to say it first. Goo Goo Dolls.
The Goo Goo Dolls. But not the current iteration of the Goo Goo Dolls. The Metal Blade Goo Goo Dolls.
The early punk rock Goo Goo Dolls?
That's the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
Like 89 to 93, that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Genesis, just to piss off Brent.
I really don't like Phil Collins. If Peter Gabriel was still a singer, I could probably get on board, but Phil Collins, no. Mm. Steve?
Oh, I thought that was just a group answer.
No, go ahead.
Oh, you shit. No, I...
You don't got one? Birth of the Smooth Jaw.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's just that there's so many.
Yeah.
Like Birth of the Smooth Jaw.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one?
That's a very tough
question.
We're going
to have to show you Birth of the Smooth Jaw.
Okay. I will pick answer C again. No, that's cool. Okay, a couple more questions. If you could have a drink, each of you personally, with a drink or a meal with... any rock star or any musician, who would it be? Alive or dead?
Great question again. I got one. Mike Ness from Social Distortion.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, he's lived a life, and I would definitely love to pick his brain.
I follow him on Instagram, and every once in a while, he'll show himself. He'll be like laying on the lawn with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
I'm like, what has happened
what
to the
has
world?
Happened
What's
to
going
you,
on
Mike
here?
Ness. Yeah. Yeah,
just like, man, am I that old?
Yeah. Talk about stories, though. That guy would have stories.
I haven't met a lot of celebrities, but I always hear the stories about don't meet your heroes.
That's true.
So it's very nerve-wracking. Like, I prefer the idea of the person rather than actually sitting down with them. Like, I think I could probably learn a lot from Les Claypool. I idolize Les Claypool. I have for decades. We could probably learn a lot from Trevor Keith. We could probably learn a lot from a lot of the old
Tim Armstrong.
Yeah, the guys who have made it work somehow.
Yeah,
by some miracle.
Yeah,
yeah, guys that weren't supposed to be where they are. Like Tim Armstrong should be dead, shouldn't he?
100 times over,
but he's still. But he's an icon.
He's
like
cooking,
crazy.
Man. He's
those are great. They even Mike Ness, right? It's like those are good guys. I'd love to pick those guys' brains. For
oh
sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, sorry,
Steve.
Here I am just listening to you guys and not coming up with an answer.
This is a very interesting podcast.
Yeah. I was like, these are really good, thoughtful answers. I should come up with one.
Yeah. I had two. The other guy I was going to say was Bob Mould, to be honest
with
you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think he's lived a hard life the way Mike Ness lived a hard life, but I think... talk about guys I idolize.
Amazing. Bob Mould's the best, yeah.
One of the greatest songwriters there is, you know?
Absolutely. Still. Yeah. Still,
even
right
now,
too.
Yeah, everything's relevant. Everything's so good.
But also, yeah, he played in just really came up in a different time where, like, people were trying to yank him out of the closet, and he was not comfortable with
that's
it
right
at the time.
That's right.
Well, it was the '80s.
It was the '80s, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was still in vogue to like refer to people by slurs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Husker Du.
Yeah.
I just played a show on December, and I did Hoover Dam by Sugar.
Great song.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Great song.
Love Sugar. My God, Hoover Blues is a good record.
We should make it 14 questions. What's your favorite slur?
No, thank you very much. They're all tied for last.
And that's the show. Anyway, did you answer?
I just kind of stole Brent's second one by giving it some context.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. And now I have the last question. Of 13 questions with Kingfisher.
All right.
Who is Kingfisher?
Oh.
Casey Connor, Joe Brownrigg, Dave Dorval, Brent Walker, Steve Lomatsky.
Yeah, that's the technical answer.
Yeah.
I think if I was going to try to define us, it would be that I would say that we are trying to or we're aspiring to be just a group of guys who are doing this for the reasons that they found, and hopefully everybody else gets on board with it. We love what we do. We write the songs we want to write, and we hope that there's an audience for it because we don't want to stop. And as long as there's people out there that are willing to listen, we just want to keep going until the wheels fall off.
Very, very well said. Can't top that. I want to thank you guys for being on Ego and Vice. I wish you nothing but the best. Good luck with the new year and the new record and all the stuff that's coming up. And keep in touch.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 126 with King Fisher Awesome chat, awesome guys. Wow, I ever have a lot in common with those guys just because we came up in the same time frame, I guess. But very cool. If you want to get a hold of me, you can always reach me at egoandvice@gmail.com. Go to my new website, egoandvicepodcast.com. Every single thing, every single link, everything you ever needed was right there. All the episodes, merch. That's the HQ. It's the Ego and Vice HQ. So I really, really want you to use it. Leave a review. If you like what you hear, if you want to be a guest, send me a message. Contact me. And we'll make it happen. In the meantime, season 7 rolls on. And we will see you next week. Thanks.
You've got a real attitude problem, McFly. You're a slacker.